After two disasters, Malaysia Airlines will get taken over by its home government.
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From APM in New York, I'm David Brancaccio with the global perspective on business and the economy. Malaysia Airlines has lost two airliners this year, with 537 people gone. The company's been burning through its cash, and now the Malaysian government is stepping in ahead of some kind of restructuring. Business reporter Russell Padmore at our partner broadcaster, the BBC, is following this. Morning to you, Russell.
Morning to David.
So trading in shares of Malaysia Airlines halted earlier today, but what is the plan here going forward?
Effectively, what's happening here, David, is the government is taking control of this troubled airline. I've got a statement in front of me from Najib Razak. He is Malaysia's prime minister. He's pointed out that MAS is part of Malaysia's history. It's a symbol of national pride, he says, of our ambitions and our place in the world. You can see that they thought they had no other option but to take control of the airline to make sure that it actually survives, its shares being delisted from the local stock exchange in Kuala Lumpur.
Other airlines that have faced situations like this, where there's been a nationalization, have often found themselves with fewer routes, fewer planes, and fewer people working for them moving forward. But broaden this out for us beyond that. How does this Malaysian Airlines situation compare to other airlines that have run into trouble?
Well, Malaysia knows that it's facing a huge bill somewhere down the line as people seek compensation from the airline, a process, I suppose, that Pan Am, something from American history, went through in the late 80s, the Lockerbie disaster. Effectively, that airline's fortunes collapsed after that crash. And Belgium, the state-owned airline Sabena, that's another one consigned to the past. These airlines, they face business challenges, particularly Malaysian. It knows that somewhere down the track, it's going to have this huge bill for compensation.
BBC business reporter Russell Padmore, thank you.
David, thank you.
In the U.S., the broadcast TV network with the most viewers these days is CBS, which revealed better-than-expected profits after the market closed yesterday. CBS has the NCIS franchise, Big Bang Theory, and all of the Showtime cable channels. We're now most of the way through corporate profits and losses season for the second quarter now. Bloomberg News calculates that profits at S&P 500 companies will be up about 9%. Three-quarters of companies made more money in the spring than the forecasters were expecting. Marketplace as Mitchell Hartman looked into this further.
First, a caveat. Every company and every industry sector is slightly different. So if you're Travelers Insurance, you've seen profits fall because of baseball-sized hail and giant tornadoes descending on your policyholders. But for corporate America, broadly speaking,
the results have been really solid.
Strategist John Canale at LPL Financial says last quarter's results bode well for the rest of the year. And what are big companies spending their profits on?
Mergers and acquisitions, increasing dividends, share buybacks. Companies are doing what companies normally do, trying to boost share price for their shareholders. They're just not doing a lot of hiring right now.
And Paul Ashworth at Capital Economics says there's a lot for U.S. companies to worry about overseas. Russia, Iraq, Argentina, Europe.
Some of those geopolitical events have made people rethink about exactly how optimistic they are about the world economy over the next 12 months.
Which explains some of the slump in the stock market recently. I'm Mitchell Hartman for Marketplace.
The Obama administration is forcing states to cut greenhouse gas emissions from power plants. These rules, which came out in June, leave some states with tougher assignments than others. For instance, Kentucky's targets for cutting emissions seem comparatively lenient, but Kentucky relies almost exclusively on coal to make electricity. And as Dan Weissman reports, that presents a special challenge.
Let's start with the counterexample. One of Kentucky's bigger cities, home to more than 20,000 people, a shiny green spot on the state's coal-black energy map, Fort Knox. Robert R.J. Durdick is energy manager at the Army base, which has cut its energy use by 51%. He shows me a solar array, a geothermal pond, which prompts an unusual boast.
We have the best dirt. Simply put, it exchanges energy very well.
And a base-wide smart thermostat system. Technicians monitor temperature and energy performance in every room on base and tweak them in real time. But Fort Knox has advantages the rest of Kentucky can't match.
If you don't have the dirt and the facilities, you can't do it.
Kentucky has the dirt, but not a completely planned, centralized, and self-contained economy and infrastructure. Coal has been a hot issue in Kentucky's Senate race, which could make or break longtime Republican leader Mitch McConnell. Here's a snippet from one of his ads.
We're going to fight back in this war.
You don't believe it.
Damn right. We're not going to sit there and take it.
His Democratic opponent has also taken a pro-coal stance, including a radio ad that hammers President Obama's clean power plan.
I'm Allison Lundergan-Grimes, and I'm running for Senate to protect our coal jobs.
But the loss of coal jobs isn't necessarily the big economic threat. Kentucky only has about 12,000 coal mining jobs left. Manufacturing provides more than 220,000. Here's John Lyons, the state's Assistant Secretary for Climate Policy.
Most often what you hear about jobs in Kentucky are the loss of the mining jobs, but these manufacturing jobs, the reason we have the manufacturing we do is because of our low electricity rates.
Kentucky's got some big auto plants, stainless steel, aluminum, all of which take a lot of electricity. Thanks to cheap coal power, Kentucky's electric rates are among the lowest in the country.
And that's why those facilities come here, is because of low electricity, and they bring these good-paying jobs with them.
Complying with the Clean Power Plan will likely force those rates to go up. And Lyons thinks some of the jobs may then go away. In Kentucky, I'm Dan Weissman for Marketplace.
And we're following a story today about credit scoring getting more lenient. The FICO credit score outfit is changing the math so that, among other things, if a bill was eventually paid or settled with a collection agency, it won't count against you. Also, unpaid medical bills are being de-emphasized. If you miss our coverage on the air, it'll be at marketplace.org. I'm David Brancaccio with the Marketplace Morning Report. APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.